back, baby. We are back for A-Leagues season 21-22, one that is shaping up as a momentous one off the field as much as on. And this is your first stop shop every week. Mondays, most probably, for the official A-Leagues podcast, men and women, and the best analysis and insight that you can get on Australian football. And I'm delighted to say that this man is back with me. The Mark Bresciano to my Vinnie Grella and vice versa. And just like the legends who went from Carlton to Empoli together, Robbie Cornthwaite, we've done the double transfer as well from the ABC, who we love immensely, and moved to the A-League's official podcast. It is good to be back, brother.
It certainly is, mate, to be alongside you. What position are we playing, by the way? Are we midfielders, attackers, or at the back? I can play. You know me, I can play anywhere, so I'm more than happy to play wherever you say. But yeah, lovely to be back. Great to be part of the official podcast of the A-Leagues. And yeah, I don't think the football in this country has been as well placed to launch as it has been since maybe season one. So really excited to see all the attention around the game and looking forward to another cracking season.
With your pedigree, you can play anywhere on the park. With my pedigree, I'll just fill in another area. And we might leave a bit of the star power to our new recruit, Rob, because we've added to the roster for season 21-22, and not just anyone, if you don't mind. A star for Canberra United, a star for the Brisbane Roar, played for the LA Strikers as well, and most importantly, 20 times for our women's national team, the Matildas. She is Amy Chapman. She'll be a big part of the broadcast on Channel 10 this season, which we are pumped for, and we're so happy to have her on board for the A-League's official podcast. Amy, hello to you and welcome.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks, Robbie. Thanks for having me. Excited. And I'll make it very clear early on, I do not do any defending, so one of you two will have to slot in there. But no, really excited to be a part of this regular podcast, and it really feels like there's a big shift into this new season, new broadcasting rights, so a lot to talk about.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, you're going to be heavily involved across the men's and the women's game with analysis, which we're going to be delighted to watch. The momentous move off the field is exciting for everyone. I think we're all enthused by it, and the energy, it's leading into this opening weekend. So we've got a massive preview with all of that in mind ahead of the upcoming season. The A-League Women's will leave for now because we're still a few weeks away from the season beginning, and we're going to let things just materialize a bit in terms of rosters and preseason friendlies before we really dig into that analysis. So it's all about the A-League Men's today. Make sure you log on and download, if you haven't yet, the new Australian football database, if you like, which is KeepUp, the new platform. It's fantastic. It's all encompassing for Australian football, and a lot of the material on the podcast will feature there as well. The team are doing incredible things behind the scenes to lift this game to levels that we all hope it can get to. We all know it can get to levels it's been to before, but needs to stay at consistently. And the KeepUp platform is pivotal to that. So make sure you get on board. Today, though, club by club season preview. We go through every team as forensically as we can. We're trying to keep in a time frame that is permissible for a podcast, of course. Our top six predictions with our champions, wooden spoon prediction. That's never nice to do, but we have to. Johnny Warren medalist call, golden boot, and then the Alu Quoll of 21-22. The young player to emerge like Alu did on the scene and took us all, of course, by storm last campaign. So we're going to go in this order. We're going to get straight into it so we don't waste any time, but we're going to go top and then bottom. So the champions and then the wooden spooners from last season, and then second and then 11th, and then third against 10th until we meet up in the middle. That does mean that the Wellington Phoenix, who finished seventh last season, end up being last. That is not intentional. I promise you, it's just the way it works out. So don't get annoyed, our New Zealand brethren across the ditch. Let's get straight into it, though, with the champions, Melbourne City, for the analysis on them. Amy Chapman, please take it away.
Well, probably, arguably, the team to beat again this season. Obviously, they've kept their stars. They've got McLaren still, and probably one of the biggest Socceroos we have coming back with Leckie. Again, they're just riddled with talent here. They've got all of a few players, so obviously Craig Noon, Remy Nazarene, but they have so much young talent coming through. I mean, we saw Atkinson. He is just building and building, so I think he's obviously another young star. Tilio, I think, towards the end of the season, everyone was getting excited about what that kid can do. So now bringing in the likes of Leckie, I can't see, and we'll discuss this later, but I can't see anyone touch. If these guys are firing, I can't see anyone touching McLaren for golden boots. So for me, this is obviously the team to beat.
Yeah, I mean, the only loss really is Craig Noone. He was an absolute superstar last year. Garby broke the story late in the season, which I don't think he was too happy about Garby. But, you know, Amy touched on it there. Matthew Lecky coming in, more than adequate replacement. You saw him play for the Socceroos. He hadn't played for 5 months and he was really sharp. He looked really strong. Naboo looked a little bit underdone, so that's a concern. But when you've got the likes of Tilio and Kolakowski in the wings, just desperate for game time. We saw what they were able to do at the back end of last season. I think front third, really dangerous. And then they've kept the back four and defence together. Nuno Raish was fantastic. Curtis Good, Atkinson, which we touched on, Jamo. I mean, they got star power everywhere and they didn't really lose anyone. The surprising thing for me was none of the young ones got a move overseas. Glover didn't get a move. Tilio did well at the World Cup. Metcalf was a star. And none of them really moved on to Europe or anywhere else. But yeah, as we said, probably the side to beat, I think, this year.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on the star quality and, okay, they lose Craig Noone, who is a massive loss. I think he's been arguably the best winger in the A-League over the last 2 years. But you bring in Matthew Lecky to replace him and you're not feeling shortchanged. For me, the exciting aspects about City and why I think they'll be hard to knock off as champions again are those youngsters that you mentioned and the improvement that can still take place in them. Now, Tommy Glover, Aidan O'Neill, Nathaniel Atkinson, Stefan Kolakowski, Marco Tilio, Connor Metcalf can all get a lot better. That is scary for the opposition when you consider that. And the Olympic experience that the likes of Atkinson, Glover, Metcalf have all had. They'll grow from that as well. Curtis Good, I know he's 28, but it still feels like, considering his injury record, he's got another level to get to potentially. So that's the frightening aspect for the opposition for me, as much as Matthew Lecky coming into a strike force to link up with Naboot and McLaren.
You're right, Garby. I mean, Curtis Good at 28, he's still got his best years ahead of him. You look at the likes of, you know, Alex Wilkinson and Andrew Durante, how long they were able to go on. And with those injuries, they've almost sort of stalled his career. He's probably going to be playing more like a 25-year-old. He's had a bit of a break and yeah, he's one that can definitely continue to build his game. We know they can score at will. They scored 57 goals, I think it was, something around there last year. So 2.5 goals a game nearly. They're just going to be another exciting weapon. And they can put teams to the sword within 10 or 15 minutes. I think they did it to MacArthur last year where they scored 3 goals in the first 20 minutes and all of a sudden game over. So, yeah, plenty of attacking weapons and rock solid at the back. There was a few question marks maybe over Paddy Kitsnorba at the start of last season. Well and truly answered them. He's locked into a long-term deal now. So I expect to see even his development as a coach and try to bring a few different things maybe into the side that we haven't seen yet.
Talking about a team they put to the sword last season. Sorry, Amy, go on.
I was just going to say, yeah, the Lecky McLaren combination is obviously going to be one that everyone's going to be watching, and obviously prides well for the Socceroos' success as well. But then you look at the likes of these fullbacks as well. Jamieson, who missed out a little bit last season, and Galloway's coming. He's scoring goals. He scored 2 in their last outing. So they're probably the most well-rounded and informed team in the league, there's no doubt.
And they embarrassed their rivals and their City neighbours, Melbourne Victory, on occasions last season. I mean, just humiliated them completely. It's hard to believe that Melbourne Victory won the Wooden Spoon. I mean, going through and doing the preparation for this, and you look at last season's ladder, it still smacks you right between the eyeballs. How did that happen? It was just the season from hell. But the revolution that has taken place at that football club off the field, as we move on to them now, is just quite stark. The first Wooden Spoon in their history has brought on a new manager, obviously, in Tony Popovich, who we all expect to completely transform things there, Rob, and you can give better insight on that than anyone. But the Inns, Jason Guerrier, Josh Brillante, Jason Davidson, Matt Spiranovic, who'll only play for Tony Popovich, it seems, Chris Economides, all Socceroos, Brendan Hamill, Nick D'Agostino. And then you got the foreigners led by Francesco Margiotta, who leads the line. I mean, it's just a complete transformation of the football club, Amy.
Yeah, that's right. I think where they had 12 new players come in and 10 out. So of all the clubs who've done a big clean out, it's definitely Victory. And when you get the Wooden Spoon, it's probably rightly so. And, of course, you bring in Tony Popovich, he's going to bring players in that he knows that he can work with. So I think for them, the only way is up. So, and they've acted like that. They've gone hard in the off season. Obviously, Economides, everybody knows the talent that kid has. So he's obviously was out for 12 months with his ACL and still trying to find some form, but he knows he can under Popper. We saw him develop, you know, in his glory years at Perth Glory. So Brillante, probably a like for like in there, but much better than Butterfield, who they've sort of gotten rid of as well. Jason Davidson, again, another one. They had to let go of Traore, so another like for like in there. So certainly look at last season, they conceded more goals than the other team, 60 goals. So that's the number one thing Popper needs to clean up, and he's brought in some strike force as well.
The one thing I'm really interested to see is because Melbourne Victory is such a big club and they're expecting immediate reaction, Popper's well known for making slow starts in the A-League. I think under Popper, they never won the first game, Western Sydney Wanderers. So I wonder if he's changed anything to think like, I need to start well to take the pressure off the side, to take the pressure off myself, although he's probably going to get as much time as he wants. But I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see them fly out of the box, if maybe it's a little bit of a slow start and a build. I know he builds his fitness programs to sort of be peaking towards the third, you know, a third of the way through the season to build towards finals and things like that. And you've got to remember the injuries that they had as well last year. We know Popper with his diets and his fitness programs, the likes of Robbie Cruz, who was out for a long time with soft tissue injuries, whether he can get him back to his best as well, because I still think Robbie's got a lot to offer. The other question mark I have, and I think it's a one big knock on Popper, is his foreigners. I don't think he gets his foreigners right that often. I think he's certainly had some stars throughout the years, but I really struggle to think of seasons, maybe that grand final when they played against Adelaide United, sorry, when they had LaRocca and Hersey and those types of guys and Castellan. But other years, I think he struggles. I think at times he's got it wrong. And some of the names that have come in, I'm not familiar with, so I'll be excited to see how they go. And as Amy touched on as well, last year they got the foreigners completely wrong.
Yeah.
So there is pressure to get that right. So let's see how they start before we make any massive judgments. But I do think they're going to be at the pointy end.
Yeah, I think they'll be strong. And the players they've brought in, they know how to win in Australia. They know the landscape of the A-League, and they'll buy into Popper's methods, of course, because he's proven that his players always do in Australia. The one concern I've got on them is the question mark around a true goal scorer. So Francesco Margiotta, we expect to lead the line. Of course, Economides can score goals. Of course, D'Agostino can provide a threat there. Robbie Cruz, if he gets back to his best. But if Margiotta doesn't fire or cops an injury, you just worry about having that true, you know, close to 20 goal a season striker, you know, like a McLaren, like a, look at some of the other recruits, Pridjevic at Western United, Tom Ehemed, Daniel Sturridge. The Victory just seems to be lacking a little bit in that department. They're going to need others to chip in, but there doesn't seem to be that major star there. Maybe Margiotta is it, and there'll be concerns around that. If he does deliver, they'll be fine. If not, they'll be looking at other avenues for goal, and that might be their main worry.
I don't know if that's a problem as such, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm trying to think of a striker for the Wanderers when he was there that had a big season. We know Santa used to always pop up and score. He'd get his 10. Maybe Mark Bridge, but was he playing as a number nine? I'm not sure Popper's number nine scores all that many goals, maybe half a dozen or maybe eight or nine, but I'm not sure that's a big problem, because I know his wide men can score midfield. I remember Mitch Nichols scored maybe 10 from midfield as well. So I do get your point, and it would be great if they had a striker that banged in 15 goals, but I'm not sure I 100% think it's that important for the way Popper plays.
Maybe Margiotta will deliver. Maybe the wide players, as you've said, Robbie, will contribute enough like they have for him in the past. Sydney FC up there again last season, finished second, of course, and not too much has changed. It's very similar there. I mean, they lose Ryan McGowan and Alex Bumyohan, but they bring in Max Burgess and then James Donaghy, who's a direct swap for McGowan, if you like, and Elvis Kamsoba comes in to give them a little bit of spark in attack potentially. But, you know, you're relying on the same players, the Brattons, the Costa Barbarousas, the Milos Ninkovic, Adam Lafondra, Babo-type players who have delivered for so many seasons for them in the past. It just seems like they'll be up there again, Amy. But you wonder a little bit if it's going to be too same, and they don't have that extra bit of spark to jump over the likes of a Melbourne City this time around. That's the question mark on the Sky Blues.
Yeah, you're spot on. And I think they would be disappointed with anything except for top two here. Again, they've got a consistently great squad, and it's one of those series, if it's not broken, then no need to change it, no need to fix it. They play some quality football, but did they bring in the X factor that we saw the likes of City and we'll get to Perth Glory and those other teams, but have they done enough in terms of recreating this new X factor? I don't know, but certainly they've still got some incredible quality. Ninkovic, Lafondra, if you give him enough service, he seems ready to fire. Bratton, Barbarousas, the list goes on. Same team, and it's quite refreshing. You know, Sydney knows knows how to make finals. They know how to achieve, and he's got the right recipe to do that. So, again, Robbie, do you think they've done enough in the offseason to maintain that top 1-2 spot?
I wouldn't be surprised if they slide a little. I mean, even if they do slide a little, they're still probably going to be in the top four. I think an interesting one is Lafondre and Bobo are going to get a full season together. We know last year they came in a little bit late, the back end. It was kind of like, oh, who was going to play? Maybe Bobo will play when he was scoring. And then they ended up playing together and it worked quite well. So whether those two are in the same lineup for a full season, they can score plenty of goals. Cam Sober looks a different player all of a sudden, scoring every single game in friendlies for them. So I do think they're going to be really dangerous. They were only 2 points behind City on the table at the end of last season. So it wasn't like this monumental gap that it feels like. I think the grand final made it feel like City were just a far better team. And then at the centre-back position, who plays alongside Wilco? He's a year older. We know he can continue to do it. They brought in James Donaghy, who's more than serviceable, but he's not a star player. King, he's going to continue to grow at left-back. We know Redmayne's good and Grant at right-back. So I think they've got a solid team. If Bobo and Lafondre get going and Max Burgess with that creativity, I think they're going to be more than fine. But I don't see a massive improvement in them.
I spent the day at Sydney FC training during the week. They still look very sharp, done a special with Alex Wilkinson, who we should touch on. I mean, 37 years of age. He's beginning his 19th season of professional football. It's quite incredible. We've done a special on him, which will be on social media this week in the lead up to the derby against the Wanderers. So check that out. We pay tribute to the man, and his teammates give him a bit of stick as well, as you can imagine, about his age, which is a bit of a laugh. But I guess that's the theme I wanted to go on. Is there a little bit of dad's army about Sydney? So Wilkinson, Redmayne, Babo, Lafondre, Ninkovic, Costa Barbarousis, Luke Bratton, all the wrong side of 30. Does that catch up with you eventually? Maybe not. Maybe they've still got enough quality to get through that. I think two players that are so important are Ryan Grant and Joel King. And we almost take Ryan Grant for granted a little bit, don't we? Because he's there every season. He was good for the Socceroos again the other night. I thought the energy he provided at right back was excellent. And he's just such a supreme player in this league. But because he's there every season, he doesn't change clubs. Maybe we don't focus on him enough before the campaign. Then a month goes in, he's put in two man of the match performances and we go, how good is this guy? Like, he's just so important to them. And Joel King was so good at the Olympics. I thought he was one of the shining lights for the Olyroos. So those two players bombing on with Bratton and Paolo Retre maybe sitting back a little bit to allow them to do so. Very important part of Sydney's play, of course. But they need that spark because maybe everything else is getting a little bit same, and a bit old, which will be, I guess, one of the aspects that opposition clubs will look at Sydney to exploit.
Yeah, and it's the reverse of what City have got. They've got a lot of their playmakers are these youngsters that are coming through, which, it's quite unpredictable. But then again, Ninkovic has unbelievable class, and no matter when, once you know his class, still no teams have been able to sort of shut him down. So can they recreate themselves? Maybe it is a little bit predictable with the Lafondre Ninkovic kind of combo. Certainly Grant does a lot of the hard yards for them and brings a lot in attack. But I'm sure, I mean, Sydney, they've still got the young guns like Patrick Wood that are going to come on and make a difference as well. So they do have some young guns there, but it's almost these veterans are too good that they've not managed to weasel their way into the starting team.
The only thing I'll say, Garby, is all the old heads are in the right areas. They're all through the middle of the park where it doesn't matter too much, I suppose, about how fast you are, as long as you're smart, which they all are, I think they're going to be fine. Injury is always a concern with an older players, but I think Sydney FC has got a pretty good injury record from memory. So I do take your point, and it could be an issue, but I think they're just okay.
If they slide, it'll be no further than fourth for mine. Like, I think they'll be fine. They'll be right up there again. There is so much quality experience and belief. So, yeah, you'd expect to see them at the pointy end once more. The Newcastle Jets, second bottom last season. A new manager comes in Arthur Pappas. So that's another good story. Another young Australian manager, which was a theme of the season last time out that we got so excited by and loved watching. He gets a crack at it. He's someone we've admired for a long period of time from the outside. He's got his experience abroad. He's been learning under Ange Postecoglou. And now he gets a chance to take the helm of a team on his own. What I really like about their recruitment are the two centre-backs they've brought in, Matt Yearman and Jordan Elsey, to come in and just stabilise such an important area of the park for a team that is likely to be up against it more often than not, you would think. I reckon they've got that spot on. But then there's a massive unknown, and that are the four foreigners that will likely play in attacking positions. I mean, Becca Mikaladze, the Georgian, Olivia Boumal, Daniel Penner, and Savas Sotiriavis. You just don't know what they're going to deliver. You know, you just don't know the pedigree and how much quality they can provide. Mikaladze, 23 years old, a Georgian, who's played twice for the national team. That's a good age bracket. Boumal's played six times for Cameroon. And Sotiriavis is only 28. So they've got players at a decent age bracket, I reckon, with some good pedigree. But as you know, Rob, you just don't know how they're going to contribute to the A-League. And that's the big concern about Newcastle this season.
Yeah, it certainly is, Garby. I mean, we have this every year with the foreigners that come to the A-League. And it's almost like, you know, it's feel, well, quite often in years gone by, they bring in three or four foreigners that you're not quite sure of. It seemed to work out for them last year. And we saw the free kick that Peña scored on the weekend, the long range left foot cannon, likened to Roberto Carlos and Rivaldo by Scotty Jamieson. So he's obviously got big raps on him already from that sort of range. But Arthur Pappas, he joins a list of like young Aussie guys, Mark Rudin, Talay, Moon, Viet, among others that have come in and done really well. So I'm excited to see what he can bring. I think he's the most exciting signing at the Jets this year. But I think it's going to take time with the amount of turnover that we've seen. You mentioned a couple of those guys. Silveira comes back from overseas. I think he was in Portugal or somewhere like that. So it's just how long it takes for this team to gel and to bond together. We know they've got some talented youngsters. I'd like to see a few more locals get an opportunity, which I mentioned last season as well. We know Adelaide are obviously always promoting the South Australians, and we know the Hunt is such a rich footballing community historically. I'd like to see a little bit more of that in the side to really get the locals excited. But yeah, as you say, Matty Yerman named as captain. They've got some no-nonsense defenders, which they're probably going to need at times, like you mentioned.
Yeah, and just adding to that, Rob, obviously they've solidified their defence somewhat with some known quantities with Elsie and German. And German's, you know, that's been a great signing for them. There are quite a few unknowns. We talk about those internationals that we've not seen. They definitely wouldn't have had a chance to play and have any time under the new coach as well. So I think this is, we talk about Sydney having the veterans, this is probably the reverse here, where there are actually quite a lot of youngsters in this team. I think this is arguably one of the youngest squads on a whole. So they are looking to their youth, perhaps, you know, with four internationals coming in, trying to get them to blend with some of the local stars as well. I think there's a real question mark over Newcastle, but I can't see them troubling the top six.
Yeah, I think those foreigners have to fire if they're any chance of pushing for the finals, and fire in a big way. And there's not a whole lot of confidence that can happen right now, but maybe they'll surprise us. Maybe they've found some gems. And if so, and Arthur Pappas clicks with his team, it'll be a wonderful story. So we wish them the best of luck. A little bit closer to home, down the F3, the Central Coast Mariners. As much as the victory finishing bottom is hard to fathom all these months on, Central Coast Mariners finished third last season. Just a remarkable campaign that we all reveled in, of course, but the outs from that season are glaring. Alan Stajic, most of all, of course, but then Alu Kuol and Jack Clisby and Danny De Silva and Stefan Nigro and Gianni Stensis is now part of the Socceroos squad. Just critical players who have left that team. And the ins aren't inspiring in any way. So you worry about things for Nick Montgomery. The crucial thing, similar to Newcastle for mine, Rob, is that central defensive pairing that stays together. Ruwan Tongyik, Kai Rolls. They keep them together. That is massive for them. And I think that's the basis for them to hopefully build another exciting season off.
Yeah, those two were rock solid last year. I think at the halfway point in the A-League, we did our teams of the year last year, Garby, up to that point. And I think they were in both of mine from memory. Certainly, Ruwan Tongyik was in there. The big thing for me that I'm sort of interested to see is we interviewed Alan, and a big part of why they were so successful was the vibe, the camaraderie they had around the club, the want to get better. And he was at the helm. He was the one running that. And when you see some of your best players leave, the guys that are left behind can often, you know, put their head down maybe a little bit. Nick Montgomery's come in now. He's obviously his first time being a senior head coach. How does he try to continue on what Stadge had worked through and to build and then to add his own ideas and keep the team up the table? I think it's going to be an extremely difficult task. In saying that, they looked pretty good against Blacktown the other day in the FFA Cup. It was only 1-0, I think, in the end, but it could have easily been, you know, 6 or 7 if it wasn't for Prendergast in goals, who made some wonderful saves. Oli Bozanic in the middle of the park, he's We spoke about the leaders at the club last year. Biri Gidi was really growing into that role. Oli Pozanic and even Matt Simon, although he's a year older, he had one of his best seasons ever last year. So those three are going to be critical, along with the two centre-backs. And then again, some unknown foreigners. The Frenchman that scored on debut looked really like a difficult customer, a bit like a Matt Simon, really tall, long limbs, big stride, sweet left foot, scored a lovely goal. So Urania as well, I should mention, because he was a revelation last year. So there is still enough there for them to be more than competitive. It's just whether they can maintain where they were, which, again, is going to be extremely difficult.
I think we can all admit that Studge caused absolute magic last year for Central Coast. I think when we talk about the biggest signings in the new A-Leagues, this is definitely the biggest loss in the league. Studge took what was, without being too frank, a very budget team, and it took him all the way to the top. So he's been phenomenal for them. So I do struggle to see how these kind of guys are going to back up those kind of performances. Obviously, still do have Oli Bosnich. He's fantastic. Josh Nisbet, he's an up-and-coming star. I hope that he can continue to thrive. And they do speak of this new Brazilian signing, new Brazilian prodigy that's coming as well from Malaysia, I believe. So everyone's got high hopes for him. So hopefully that he can bring a bit of X factor.
Yeah, that's Moresh, who they'll be hoping will deliver. Benny Nicololo is the Frenchman who's got a bit about him. And then Nikolai Muller, who knows the landscape of the A-League, moves across from the Wanderers. So they've added a bit there to go with, you know, a strong spine that helped contribute success last season. Tongi Kinrolls, who I mentioned, Bozanic, who you mentioned, Matty Simon. There is a strong foundation there. There is reason, I think, for Mariners fans to hope for a push towards the top six yet again. I don't think any of them are sitting here going, we'll finish third once more, but they can maybe push for the finals if that spine stays together, fit, energised, united like they were last season, and then those new players, the foreigners, come in and contribute around that. So that's the challenge for Nick Montgomery, to keep that energy going through the team and his first crack at it. But he knows that club so well. He knows the culture so well, so he should be able to tap into that. Pressure comes with it, but wouldn't it be great if we see the Mariners firing once more? Just about the most intriguing team, I think, is Western United going into this season. 10th last campaign, which was hugely disappointing. They've added a man who I think we all admire, we all just about love in Australian football, and we want to see do well, and that is John Aloisi, who does come into this job, it's fair to say, with his managerial prospects moving forward, hanging by the balance. He needs to deliver. I think he gets undersold by many. His job at Brisbane was good. He made back-to-back semi-final appearances. That doesn't get enough credit before things went awry, but he needs to deliver on this one. And he's been given a squad that could potentially back that up. I mean, Alex Prijovic, 13 times a Serbian international. Rene Krijan, 48 times a Slovenian international, played for Inter Milan. Then you add in Jamie Young, Dylan Wenzel-Halls, Benny Garuccio, Noah Bottic, who's an Australian Young Footballer of the Year, Leo Lacroix, the Swiss defender. I mean, they've really managed to add some quality. Hopefully, Johnny can pull it all together, because on paper, Amy, they seem to have a really exciting lineup.
Yeah, and you're right. Everyone's been wondering, what is Johnny Aloisi up to? Who's he going to coach next? So it's great to see him back out there. And you could even see in their most recent game how excited he is being out back playing competitive games. And like Johnny Aloisi does, he pulls in players he knows he can work with. He's poached straight from Brisbane Roar. Obviously, Jamie Young, who's one of the most acrobatic goalkeepers that you'll see. He's not incredibly tall in stature, but, has been arguably one of the best over the last few seasons. And then Wenzel Halls is incredibly exciting. I think he's a real talent. He's a little unpredictable, exceptionally quick. So if you can, work with his talent, he could be a real, option for them. And, of course, Diamante, he's still got one of the best ball players in the entire league there to work with. So first season, Western United were fifth. Then they slipped down to 10th last year, and I think they've got a lot more hopes. They've obviously had some off-season pickles around where they're going to play and all that kind of stuff, which has been entertaining. But John Aloisi knows how to pull a group together, and he'll be expecting to push for that top six.
Yeah, I've got him as one of my improvers for this year. It was 3 years, I think it was, on the weekend since Johnny Aloisi's been on the touchline as a head coach. So time moves on pretty quickly in football. And I think the most important thing is, okay, yes, the FFA Cup win, they had a bit of luck. There was a controversial moment with the ball bouncing across the line, or potentially bouncing across the line. whatever happened there, they're into the round of 32, and that will give them so much confidence going into the season. If they'd lost against Newcastle, pressure would have come on. There would have been a few questions asked. Oh, you know, they didn't beat Newcastle. We thought they were going to be one of the big improvers. But now they go into the opening game against Victory. I think it is from memory with their tails up a little bit. And we mentioned some of those players. Neil Kilkenny for me is a massive, massive player. Yeah. Whether he is a divisive figure, he is a combative, speaks his mind, and obviously things didn't work out at Melbourne City and then at Perth Glory. But you want him in your team. I don't care how many fights he gets into with his players at training. He's a winner. He demands the best of everyone. I think you just have to make room for him. I don't care so much about the team dynamic when he's putting those type of displays. And, Gubby, you're a Perth Glory man. You're probably sad to see him go.
Oh, I think he was hugely influential for Perth. I think he was in our team of the season at the halfway mark. And then, of course, he had issues there. So there's a reason why managers keep bringing him into squads, because they know he can deliver. They know that he can be divisive as well. But you back yourself to get the best out of him and keep him happy. So I think he'll be the shrewd head in the engine room that they'll need. Josh Risden, let's not forget the games he played at the World Cup in 2018, and then he's had a horrible injury run since. And he seems to be back to full fitness now, and that's important for them. Lockie Wales is a player with talent. I'm excited by Pridjevic, though. I think he can be one of the premier strikers in the A-League this season. All the word is that they've managed to really find a gem here, someone who could be playing perhaps at a more credentialed competition over in Europe, and they've managed to bring him to the A-League, and that's fantastic. So hopefully he can deliver. He scored an easy tap-in, of course, in the FFA Cup where Jack Duncan made a mistake. He started on the bench. It seems like he's someone who could bang a lot in and potentially challenge for the Golden Boot. So good luck to Johnny A. We all want him to do well, and they will be an intriguing watch every single week. Brisbane, who finished fourth last season. Another surprise packet, Amy, in your part of the world. Warren Moon did a wonderful job. It seems like they've lost a little bit more than they've gained, but you're at the coalface of it there. Tell us a bit about the Brisbane Roar and their prospects.
I am, and I have a bit of an unconscious or actual conscious bias to Brisbane, of course. It's great to see Warren Moon. He's succeeded on every level, and I probably think they exceeded expectations last season. They were building, and again, I think maybe not enough off-season signings. You want a bit more excitement. These are probably the quietest ones. And yes, they've looked to local talent. There is some young guns coming through, which are exciting. But again, you'd like to see some of these X-factor big signings coming in. Like you said, they've lost more than they've gained. I think the number one goal scorer was Wenzel Halslaughter and Dan Lucky, their playmaker, their creative number 10. And of course, Scotty McDonald, their second number 10. Gone. So where are we going to get this creativity from? I have seen them play in the flesh the last few weeks. I think a big scoop for Brisbane Roar has been Mile Iznich. I absolutely love watching him play. I think he is a good transfer. Will he replace what they've lost? I don't know. There are a couple of young guns coming through, though, and I think we'll talk about our potential young guns, but Cyrus Demme has been a real find. Don't know how much game time he's going to get, but he'll make a big difference. And he's the new Alex Parsons project, I think. So between those two, they're going to have to look to the youth to score goals. But, yeah, I'm left feeling as a Roar fan like I wish they did more in the off-season.
One thing about Brisbane is over the last two seasons, they've been really solid. I think they've got a good structure and they don't concede a lot of goals. I think the only thing for me that really killed them last year was losing that home final against Adelaide. I think, you know, Adelaide had no Craig Goodwin. Adelaide had never won a final away from home. I thought Brisbane were going to roll them, and then all of a sudden they're one game away from a grand final or something like that. But you lose in the first round and all of a sudden it puts a really, you know, a bit of a dampener on everything. You made the finals at home and you did nothing. So the only criticism I had last year was I felt like they played very ad hoc football. Like they'd score their goals from just sort of like random events, and they didn't really have a structured way of breaking teams down. Obviously, they had the players to do that with Denzaki and Parsons, but I just wonder if that's something they've worked on over the offseason, whether those recruits that they've brought in, like Mile Iznic and Luke Ivanovic, are coming in to play a structured role. And I think that's where they can make the biggest improvement in their game going forward this season.
Yeah, quarterfinals of the FFA Cup, but they lost 3-2 to the NPL All-Stars on the weekend. I like the signing of Luke Ivanovic. I think he's a player with opportunity, which he couldn't get at Sydney, can deliver. Juan Lescano, who's a Real Madrid and Liverpool youth product, can hopefully give them the firepower they need up front. And Miljusnic, you've mentioned, has been hugely exciting. But Denzaki's a big loss, as is Jamie Young. Joey Champness was good last season. Macaulay Gillespie was a key part of their defence. A little bit worried about Brisbane, but Warren Moon knows the landscape in that city, and he knows what young players need to do, and he's so aware of the talents. I think they can be exciting and trouble teams on their day yet again. I worry about the consistency over the course of the season. So that's the Raw covered. Let's move across to the Wild West. And it has been the Wild West again in the off-season, but in a wonderful way. I mean, Tony Sage, people want to laugh at the bloke and mock the bloke. He ponies up better than anyone in the league. You know, when no one expected it, he just brings across Daniel Sturridge, if you don't mind, who hated life in quarantine. He wanted to get a top-class haircut, but now he's out. He's looking fit. He's looking sharp. And they're so excited by him. The poor guy has to now go on the road for 7 weeks after their opener against Adelaide, which he probably won't be too happy with again. But I'm doing the dance now on the screen, if you don't mind. I'm hoping we'll see a lot of this dance throughout the season. In my Liverpool shirt as well, if you don't mind.
Daniel, you go through a similar process when you get your hair cut as well, don't you? You need CVs submitted, you need the works.
I was just about to say, you've not gone to the same barber as Garvey, that's for sure.
I'm all over the show.
But isn't this exciting? I mean, yeah. Clearly a character. He's clearly got a bit of banter about him, sort of half serious, half not. No one's too sure, but we love it. He comes across with his 3.5 million followers. So if it's a great marketing ploy that turns into be a great footballing ploy as well, then everybody wins. But yeah, certainly the best signing, arguably the biggest signing since Del Piero for the league. Certainly, a super effort from Perth. And Robbie, you want to chime in on this?
Well, I was just going to refer to Daniel's tweet before we came on air. Sturridge walking out for his first training session looked mean, looked fit, looked ready to go. What do you reckon? Do you think he plays round one, Garby?
The word I'm hearing is he probably starts on the bench week one. He's just going to be so fascinating. I mean, look, I think injuries might crop up during the season. His record's not great in that regard. We know that he's an enigma mentally as well. You know, I had a bit to do with him over in the UK. I've written a piece for the A-League website about it. One day he's the most charming, engaging player on the planet. The next day he's sort of in his own world and you don't quite know what's going through his head. That's what he's all about. And that probably plagued him a little bit in his last few years over in the UK, injury-wise and otherwise. But I tell you what, if it does all come together, I think he could tear this competition to shreds, like legitimately rip it apart. He is still that talented. And by all reports, he's super fit and he didn't need to be sold on Perth. Like I've spoken to Brad Jones about it. He said he was keen. Brad Jones just gave him some insight on Perth and what the A-League was all about. It wasn't any wooing. You know, obviously the money had to match up, but he was happy. Apparently it was a pretty smooth process and it all happened quite quickly at the end. So in that respect, it looks like he's enthused for it. And if everything else comes together, which is a massive question mark, of course, I think we are set for a player who will excite this competition enormously on the field, but off the field as well, and bring other people in from the outside to keep the A-League at arm's length. And that's obviously a crucial part of this transfer.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think what he brings off field is just as important as what he brings on. And we know with the launch of Keep Up, you can catch up with the stories from here and from Europe, the men's game, the women's game. And it's about dragging those European fans over to the local game and getting more eyes. And he's one player that's definitely going to do that. A player who's equally as important for me is Brandon O'Neill.
Yeah.
I mean, the way he speaks, he feels like a 35-year-old veteran. I think he's still like 27. He's obviously come back from a stint in South Korea and in Thailand, hugely Sydney FC. The way he presents in the media, he was just the perfect fit for Skipper. Every single box, and he's a player that they're going to make that team tick. Richie Garcia, I thought he did quite well, to be honest, in his first year as head coach in difficult circumstances. Again, road trips and quarantine and all those type of things. Hopefully that's all in the past. We know they're going to be away for some time over Christmas and early January, I think it is. But I think there is a lot to like about Perth Glory. 44 goals conceded last season is the big concern for me. Jack Clisby is one signing, but he's going to be up against Otter. Acquisition. Brandon O'Neill offers some cover. Calver comes in and Aspropotamides, I think he did. Question marks over the fence for me, Daniel.
Yeah. And Brad Jones is a massive recruit. You know, let's not forget his pedigree in the game. I mean, he's someone who just always has to prove people wrong. it feels like he's someone who we always doubt in Australian football. And then you look through his career, you know, Liverpool, he spent 5 years there, did well at Feyenoord. He always manages to deliver. You know, I think he can come in and hopefully provide some cover. Where do you sit on Perth, Amy? How do you see them faring?
Oh, I'm excited to see. I mean, my only concern, I suppose everyone's concern, is do you put all your eggs in this one basket, this massive marquee signing? And who knows how he's going to adapt to this league. Certainly he's got some individual talent, but you need to keep them fit. You can't rely so heavily on them. But then again, their front three, that can be a highlight bill on its own. Fornaroli, Keogh, Sturridge, those three, do they have the midfield to provide that service and the back four? They probably do have a few weaknesses or holes in that sense, but certainly they're going to have some excellent highlights at the top end. So I'm expecting big things from them this season, and I think they'll do great things for the game. Perth have really stepped up the level in the off-season.
Yeah, the youngsters are important. Steins, Timmins, Bodnar, Armiento, Niongabiri, there's some talent there. If they can lift another level, then I think they've got a good basis. And then a lot of it is dependent on Sturridge. I think if he fires like we know he's capable of, they could push for top four potentially. If he doesn't, then they're probably a team that has a similar story to last season. Maybe a spot or two out the finals. Maybe they jump in the finals. They're probably around that mark. But Sturridge is the player who could lift them up to the top four. He's got just that much talent. Now, Amy, one thing you'll learn on this podcast, when it comes to the team from Adelaide, you just sit back. You just sit back in your chair and you just hand it over to the king of the city, the man who has the keys to the city of churches. You just say, Rob, educate us. Just enlighten us on what's going on there. So we move across to the Reds, fifth last season, and we just say, Robbie Cornthwaite, give us the whole kit and caboodle.
I'm a bit torn, if I'm honest, because last year I wrote them off and they weren't too happy with me, and then they all of a sudden had a great season. So I've got to tread carefully. I'm finding it difficult, though, to find a lot of upside. I know they've got Craig Goodwin. I know they've got Halloran. Isaias is back. I saw him on the weekend, actually. I went out to the family fun day. Daniel just assigned me autographs.
That's what you're talking about. The king.
He's pumping me up now. And Isaias, he looks fit as ever. He looks as competitive as ever. He's one player that you just do not want to play against. I'm sure people remember, he's in the face of everyone. He's in the referee's face. He's a constant talker. He's battling. He's going to be huge again for them and give that little bit of experience. Cassini Yang, as I mentioned, he looked really impressive, to be honest, at the back end of last season. He sort of took over from that number nine role when Tommy Juric wasn't fit and available. Stephen Mork had one of his best seasons ever. The big problem for me for Adelaide is they haven't been able to play enough good quality opposition in the preseason. They've won their two FFA Cup games that have both been against NPL sides. They've played against another NPL side and then a select team. And the only time they've played an A-League team was when they went up to Brisbane and they lost. So I wouldn't be surprised if they start the season really, and Amy's giving a little fist pump there for people who are listening in their car or on the public transport. I think they're going to be underdone. I think they're going to start the season underdone. Craig Goodwin had his ankle injury just before that Brisbane game. So he's been out for 3.5 months recovering from that. Returned to training only 2 weeks ago. It's been a very short period in the pre-season. And Stephen Mork, I don't know if everyone remembers Stephen Mork hobbling around every game last season with a pad strapped to his shin. Well, that was from a broken leg, which continued to trouble him. So he had surgery on that as well in the off-season. So two of their most important players are probably underdone. And the whole team as a whole, for me, haven't had the match practice. You have question marks over the defence as well. For me, you're going to have Javi Lopez. He's 35, 36 years old. You're going to have Nick Ansell or George Timotheu. You're going to have Michael Jakobsen, who's more than serviceable. So, I mean, does Cavallo play left back again? For me, the defence is a real problem, but I always find them so difficult to pick. Like, I could write them off and they could be half decent. So, I'm... wait and see where I put him in the top six.
I'll do my 30 seconds for you, Robbie. I unsubscribed shortly after, but no. There's something about Adelaide and Brisbane. I feel like there's a little rivalry that's constantly there. They're always fifth or sixth. One of them's going to kick each other out of the final spot. You know, you can have Stefan Mork for a bit. We'll have him for a bit. So it's one of those weird ones for me, but I absolutely love playing. I want deny that. I think Halloran, when he's firing, Stefan Mork, how feisty and talented he is. I think when they can turn it on, they can really turn it on. And the return of Isaias, he's one of the best players to watch in the league. And I'm hearing good things about this youngster. I won't even attempt his pronunciation. There's a Bernardo Oliveira, something like that.
Yeah, son of Cassio, legend Cassio. Obviously, I'm going to touch on him a little bit later. I don't want to give it away too easy. But the reason that Alhassan Toure left was basically that, okay, Alhassan, you're a great player, but this kid's 4 years younger and we see much more upside and he's going to play in front of you. So we'd rather play the 17-year-old than you, unfortunately. And I think Bernardo is going to be one to keep an eye on this season.
That's exciting for Adelaide fans to listen to. Tommy Urich, obviously a big loss, but it seems the likes of Mork and Halloran, the old firm there for the Reds, are going to have to contribute again for them to push for the finals once more. Another one of Robbie Cornthwaite's side, the Western Sydney Wanderers, eighth last season. And with that in mind, there is no manager under more pressure going into this season than Carl Robinson. It's him, daylight, the length of the Flemington straight, the length of the Randwick straight, and then the next. He really has to get going in the first 4 to 6 weeks or he just won't be there. Many people think he might have been lucky to get this season, but he's brought in some very talented players and he needs to get them firing from the off. Tomer Hemed, Reece Williams, who I've told is a bit of a galvanising figure there. He's maybe come into the dressing room and sorted out some of the differences they might have had. The lack of cohesion, apparently he's been really good in that sense. Rami Nadjarin, Terry Antonis, Dimi Petratos, Ogawa, the Japanese players, and Mahias in goals. Stephen Agarkovic came in at the end of last season, so he's like a new signing. And then Jack Rodwell, who's going to be really intriguing, isn't he? Someone with Premier League pedigree whose career has obviously fallen by the wayside and now gets another crack at it in Australia. How good if he manages to find some form and fitness? So that's another one that could be one out of the box for Carl Robinson. They lose Mitch Duke. They lose Bruce Kamau, who was their player of the season. But they seem like they've really lifted in so many areas. And Carl's got to get them humming from the start. If he does, I mean, they're a team that could push for the top four, you would think, Amy.
Yeah, and I think there was a fair bit of pressure on when he needed to act and be busy in the off-season, and he did exactly that. So I think, for me, Western Sydney are going to climb this season. They've got the talent to do that, and the pressure is on to do that for Robinson. Certainly the Israeli striker, Hemed, that's massive. If they can give him the service that he needs, he'll be huge. Well, I think we're all excited to see where he sits now. Certainly maybe not on the same scale as Sturridge, but has clearly shown he can play in the Premier League and the top league. A bit more of a defensive midfield position, but will certainly be a big asset for them. Petratos, there's a lot of teams who've taken him on, and you know the talent he's got. Can you find the right spot for him in the right team? I don't know if anyone's quite found that yet, because he's certainly got the talent. And I think they'll rely on him heavily as a playmaker there. Still got Troisi, Ugarkovic, Antonis, and Abini. They got goal scorers. So, I think they're a team that will climb up this season.
The jury's still out for me, if I'm honest, because I think he had all the tools he needed last season and he just didn't deliver. I think he was lucky to survive. I think he was lucky in the fact that they churned through a few managers beforehand and they thought that hasn't worked. We have to stick with him, which I think is fine. I think if that's the strategy you want to take. I think Terry's probably, I know he's rated, but I think he's so good. I didn't realise how good he was until he came to the Wanderers for that short period of time. Technically, he is he's one of the best I've seen. Like, he is ridiculous. And if Wanderers have a big season, he could be a sneaky for a Johnny Warren or something like that. I don't know how they're going to go. I don't know what it is about Carl Robinson. It's nothing personal, but he just rubs me the wrong way. They have to start really, really well, or he's going to be under pressure really, really quickly. Tomer Hemed, a great signing. Again, nothing against these players, but Bernie Abini, Ugarkovic, Johnny Katrumbas. I mean, they've all come from Newcastle, which were not really the best team in the league. They were ticking for those 8-9 games when he was there. So obviously he's got a lot of trust and faith in him. It's a similar story to last preseason. Except for the fact that I think last year they just signed all these big names and then just try to fit them in.
Yeah.
And it didn't really work. So hopefully this time they've gone and got the players that they want to play in the system. Have you still got the likes of Tate Russell and Aquilina in those fullback positions who are exciting? This is the most interesting story for the start of the A-League for me.
Yeah, it is a big story to see how Carl Robinson goes, and he has to get things right. I mean, Tomer Hemed, I think, is a very good signing, but if there's another question mark on them, it's if Hemed goes down for a period of time, then who do you play as the number 9? Bernie Abini is the other option. if he's not firing or if his fitness is off, they don't have another central striker. Then you start to put square pegs in round holes. So a lot of pressure on Tommy Ahmed. I think they've signed very well in that regard. I think he will score. The service, it's a great point you mentioned, Amy, is critical with him. When Wellington didn't get their service right to Ahmed, he wasn't scoring early in the season. Then they found the right way to hit him up and he was unstoppable. You've got to get that service right. So Carl Robinson, the pressure's on to find the wingers who can give him the ball in the right areas and in the right manner. So that is, it's just going to be a massive test on the Welshman, sorry. And if he doesn't fire, well, they'll be looking for a new manager, you'd imagine, in the first couple of months. So, yeah, massive story to watch. MacArthur is a big one as well. Sixth last season in their inaugural campaign. And the attacking group, Rob, looks formidable on paper for MacArthur and Ante Milicic.
Well, I was just looking at my notes here. I thought I wrote it down. I have, actually. 33 goals they scored last season. They were kind of not a pragmatic side. They like to keep the ball. They had a slow build-up. They weren't always going forward. But you look at the names that they brought in. Davila, Noon, De Silva, Juric, and even Much and Uzcock. 29 goals between them last season. Nearly all of the goals that MacArthur managed. And 7 assists. So the amount of creativity, yes, they lose Matt Derbyshire, who scored 14 goals, but the amount of creativity and goals that they've brought in, it's a really targeted approach to the offseason. They've said, we need to score more. We haven't. Now the big question mark is, do you change the way that you play? Because we saw them last year, I think it was a game against the Mariners, where they're so happy to keep the ball. They're a team that built for finals. They're always in the game, and then you get your Derbyshire to pinch a goal. I think they're going to have to open up a little bit more. And I watched the highlights back of the game on the weekend when they won 3-0. I think it was in the FFA Cup. De Silva looked sharp. De Villa looked sharp. They all looked really sharp. The movement, Charles Mwamba again looked really, really lively. And we know Tommy Juric, if you give him enough opportunities and he's fit, he can score. I think they've got a lot of goals in them this season if they get the system right.
Yeah, and I think we talk about that service for Hemed in Western Sydney. The service is right here for MacArthur, I think. You've obviously got De Silva and De Villa. De Villa is, by a long shot, my favourite player to watch last season. He was unreal. So creative. So I think they've certainly got a lot of attacking threats. Craig Noon, also a massive scoop for them. So I think they've got a bit there. Again, you'd like to see Tommy Yaw being utilised a little bit better. And, yeah, they weren't known for their goal-scoring ability last season. So he's done well in that attacking midfield position. Will they provide enough service to Tommy Juric and the way that they play to provide him with the right quality of service? It'll be an interesting one to watch. This is probably Ante Milicic's first really good shot at a consistent pre-season leading into the next season, because he obviously had the Matildas pre that and was a little bit rushed. So I'll be interested to see how they go, but I've got the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you've got Craig Noon, who's a true trademark winger. He'll hit the byline and cross it in for Juric. But then you'll probably have De Silva or De Villa on the other flank, and probably interchanging between the number 10 position and the wing, and they play a different way. With them, it's intricate. So you're going to have a complete contrast on either side of the field, on either flank to Juric. So how he gets that balance right, if he does get it to click, I think that's hugely exciting for them. Of course, the other question mark is what's going on off-field at MacArthur. I mean, Mark Milligan walks out as assistant coach at the start of his tenure there. Adam Federici walks out at the start of the season after having such a great inaugural campaign with them. We know that something's not right. That's no secret. Have they managed to put that all to bed now or not? If it's still an issue, it probably affects him to some extent on field. So we'll watch that with interest. But the outs are significant. Milligan, Denny Genro, Federici and Matt Derbyshire, who was so good last season. They've brought in quality to replace them. Then is everything just hunky-dory and okay behind the scenes? If so, we know they can play finals football again. If not, well, it might bring them down. So we'll see how they transpire in that sense. We go across the ditch for the final team of our season preview before we get into our predictions, and that is Wellington. This was not done on purpose, but we went top then bottom, and you finished seventh last season. Amy, what do you make of the Kiwi outfits and their prospects coming into the campaign?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the sad realities is we haven't gone across the ditch. We've gone down to Wollongong. And I think that's one of the biggest difficulties. And that's arguably, I think, that they lost Stephen Taylor for that exact reason. It's a really massive sacrifice for these guys to pick up and move away from their families again. So certainly I'm feeling for these guys. But, of course, they've probably had the biggest exodus of players from last season. They were an exciting team to watch. They've lost the Johnny Warren medalist, of course, in De Silva. So De Villa. So, yeah, some huge, huge losses there. Seven players out, didn't bring a huge amount back in. You saw Cam Devlin as well gone. So, and Stephen Taylor, I think, memory, did they announced him captain 1 week and then was out completely the next week. So, look, not expecting massive things from this team. Certainly still have Pio, who I think is an incredibly exciting player, and, of course, Ball, who's very talented. So, I have massive high hopes for these guys this season, which is a bit harsh considering the sacrifices they're having to make.
I think it's all been said before, but we've just got to commend them again last season. I know it seems like a long, long time ago, but what they were able to do in difficult circumstances was incredible. And they made a really late charge trying to get into the finals. If they had snuck in, they probably would have been able to cause some damage because they were in red-hot form. They had those couple of games in New Zealand towards a draw against your boys, Daniel. Perth may have just slowed their run and cost them. But in my notes here, I've got green highlighter for positives and red for negatives. I don't think, if I'm being honest, for Wellington. That said, I don't think they're under any pressure. I don't think there's any pressure or any expectation for Wellington to do anything. And whatever they're able to achieve is probably a pass mark. So I think it's all upside for them. I think Talay is more than capable of springing some surprises. Still got some good young local New Zealand players in the side. And it's one of those teams where it's like, for me anyway, it's like it's my second team. Like, I don't think there's anyone that dislikes Wellington. So if they go on to prove me wrong, I'll be more than happy.
Oh, we all would. The outs are significant, though. Davia, Hemed, Taylor, Devlin. I mean, it's just such star quality and experience. Gary Hooper's a big inclusion. So he will score goals if he gets the right service. They've done well to bring him back. And I think the attack is okay. Hooper, David Ball, who just works his backside off from the start of the game to the last, so industrious and a goal threat. Reno Piscopo, as we know, is a very good footballer, he'll play on one wing. I really like Ben Wayne. So I think in attack, they're okay. They've got a good goalkeeper in Ollie Sale. It's the spine I'm worried about. Defensive midfield, central defence. Is it just too weak against the best teams in the competition? And will they be found wanting in that regard? I think they will struggle more than they succeed this season. But I think if they can just find a way to stabilise defensively, they've got enough players in attack to trouble some sides. Let's get into our predictions then. The all-important top six call that I know a lot of supporters are hanging out for. Amy, ladies first, your debut will give you the honours. Your top six in order and your champions for season 21-22.
A lot of pressure here. Look, I'll start with Adelaide. No, only kidding. All right. So I've got Melbourne City. They're going to win premiers. I think they're pretty untouchable if they can get everyone firing. Sydney FC coming in second. Victory up there. Western Sydney in at fourth. I think Perth will make it into fifth. And I've written currently about four teams in sixth position. So I've got there Brisbane, Adelaide, MacArthur and United. So, look, you're going to make me pick one.
You've got to go for Brisbane, yeah?
I have to say Brisbane. Okay. But also think MacArthur will have a good run too. Sorry, Adelaide.
We'll make it Brisbane for the Brisbane girl. You're allowed to be a little bit biased in episode one, especially when it comes to predictions. So Warren Moon to do it again for Amy Chapman and round out her top six. Rob.
Just before we get a flood of emails complaining how bad my top six is, let's just remember how far off we all were last season. Okay?
Exactly. This means absolutely nothing.
I'm throwing myself under the bus here because this means absolutely nothing. I've changed it about 15 times. So without further ado, I'll agree with Amy, City to finish premiers. I'm going to go for Victory to make the same leap as Central Coast Mariners last year and go from bottom almost all the way to the top. Sydney FC to pretty much hold ground, maybe slide one place into third. I've got the Bulls in fourth, MacArthur. I think there's star quality in the amount of goals in fourth. As much as I've got question marks about the Wanderers, they can't be as bad as last season. I've got them in fifth. And then a bit like you, Amy, it's like a bit of a lucky dip from there. I'm going to back Johnny A to get West United back in the top six.
I've crossed out seven different teams on my top six. The top three I've got set, and then it's like written a team down, crossed it out. Another one down, crossed it out. Another one down, crossed it out. And I'm just juggling them around. Melbourne City top for me as well. I've got Victory second under Popper. Sydney FC third. But here comes a little bolter for me. I've gone Western United fourth. I think they've got a really good squad, and I think Johnny can lift them. So they're my surprise packet. I've got the Wanderers at fifth. And then I think you'll get it right this season, Carl Robinson. And then I jostled between MacArthur and Perth in sixth, and I've just gone for the glory. I'll back Daniel Sturridge into fire and get them into the finals.
All these biased people picking the hometown team. I'm the only professional here that's going with the facts.
You're about six people at your... Thank Robbie.
There's going to be pitchforks outside the Cornthwaite residence tomorrow morning from the Adelaide fans, considering you didn't pick him. So Perth in there for mine, but I mean, I think MacArthur are a team that can certainly play finals football as well. It's very difficult from, I think, fourth place down. I think we've all got City, Victory and Sydney as the top three. And then it gets a little bit trickier. So maybe that gives you some sort of guide. This is less pleasant to pick because we don't want to see anyone struggle or fail, but someone will. So your wooden spoon prediction, Rob, kick us off.
I think it's no surprise with the way my analysis went with them. I think Wellington, I think it's all to do for them. It's probably a second year away from home. Hopefully it's not for the whole season. But yeah, like I said, they're under absolutely no pressure and I'd be more than happy to see them finish anywhere else on the ladder. Whether they get into the top six and do a Central Coast, I'd be delighted for them, but I just can't see it happening.
Amy?
I've had to pick Wellington as well. I just don't think they've got the depth. It's a big ask. Look, I do think they'll pinch some points off some teams, but for me, I can't see them do it. I mean, anything above bottom for me is a bit of a win for them.
Hey, borders are open from New South Wales to New Zealand. Get me over there because I've left Wellington out of the wooden spoon calculation. I think the attack will be okay just to get them through. I've gone with the Newcastle Jets. I don't want to because I like Arthur Pappas so much. And I think he can be a good manager. I just worry about the lack of quality in the squad. And I'm not sure the foreigners will quite fire. So I've gone the Jets. I did consider Wellington, but Newcastle for me. But I hope for Arthur's sake I'm wrong because he's a top man. I think he'll be a very good coach. I just don't know if he's got the cattle to quite climb up the table this season. The Johnny Warren medalist, I'll go first on this one. I've gone for an Aussie to win it for the first time since Nathan Burns in 2014-15. I'm picking Chris Economides of the Melbourne Victory. I think he was on that trajectory to be a best player in the league type player, and then he had that knee injury. I think the signs have been good enough, and I think under Popper, he'll be strong, fit, good team around him. I think Chris Economides can have a massive campaign and win the Johnny Warren medal. I'd like to see an Aussie have that award around his neck at the end of the season for the first time in a while. And I think Chris Economides might be our best prospect.
Well, I've gone for, well, I don't know what Amy's gone for, but I'm going to go for Ulysses Davila again. I think last year he should have won it outright. Nothing against Ninkovic. I thought he was a much better player than Ninkovic last year. And I think where I've got the Bulls finishing in the top four, I think he'll be key to their success.
I like both of those picks. They're two players there, but I'm going to go Lecky. I think we're all excited to see him back in the first time on home soil in a very long time. So I think for them, he's going to be a big player. He's going to be a real asset for Sydney. So for me, I'm picking him.
Rob, your golden boot winner for season 21-22.
I'm just going to keep it at two words. Jamie McLaren, move on.
It could be the Jamie McLaren medal by the time he's retired, before he's retired. They could just rename it by the time he's finished his stint in Australia if he finishes up his career here. Yeah, I mean, Amy, have you got a different thought on that or is it McLaren for you as well?
No, I think it's McLaren 100% by cricket scores, I think. I think they've got the players to give him the service and he's the man to finish it. So I think he'll be untouchable for Golden Boot if he stays fit.
If Sturridge stays fit, I think he could certainly challenge and win it. It's just I think he'll miss too many games throughout the season with little injuries. I think Pridjevic from Western United will challenge for it. I like Tommy Hemmett if he gets the service. Adam Lafondra, let's not discount him. We don't discuss him enough. He'll be up there again. But how can you go past Jamie McLaren if Melbourne City do what we all expect him to do? He'll just score a truckload of goals again. So he's the one for mine. Hey, we loved Alou Kuol last season. He was the story of the first 2 months at least, and it's great to see him going so well in Germany. So we framed this category the Alou Kuol of season 21-22, the young player to emerge, more likely than not an Australian. If you've got someone else, then by all means pick it. But your Alou Kuol of season 21-22, Amy Chapman.
All right, I've got two because I'm just indecisive like that. But I think Tilio, he was unbelievable towards the back end of that season. I think we're all excited to see what he can bring. And if he gets a full season with quality players around him, he's exceptionally exciting. But look, I mean, I know he had a bit of a rush last year. So if I'm talking about a proper unknown, it's the Brisbane local boy, Cyrus Demme. He's been unbelievable in the lead-up games, scored a hat-trick against Lions in the FFA Cup. So he's certainly one to keep an eye out.
I'll just jump straight in, Daniel. I had Tilio written down. I had Charles Mwamba as well, though he's probably a little bit older. I think he's 23. But I'm going to go for the legendary left back at Adelaide United's son, Cassio's son in Bernardo. He was on the books of Melbourne City basically midway through last year. You're not going to do that to put a 17-year-old in the youth team. As I mentioned, Alhassan Toure has been moved on because Bernardo's going to play in front of him. Tricky, creative sort of number 10 winger coming inside, floating around the in and around the edge of the box. And at 17 years old, I think he's still 17. Plays for Australia, got an Aussie passport. He's one to watch for me.
I like Luka Ivanovic. I think he's got a bit about him. I'm not sure he'll quite be that level of player, but I think he deserved more opportunity at Sydney. He didn't get it because of their quality. I think he'll be afforded that at Brisbane, so I think he can emerge. I like Ben Wayne. He's my pick. I know he's not Aussie. He's a Kiwi, but he scored 6-14 last season. He'll get opportunities at the Phoenix, I think, in this campaign. Only 20 years of age. I think he's one for New Zealand football to get hugely excited about. And from an A-League point of view, I think we'll really enjoy him. Coming through the season, Ben Wayne in the A-League men. So he's my pick for the Alukwal, the youngster, to emerge this season. It just about does it. I mean, the season preview is always the longest episode because there's so much to get through. But I think we've done it in a pretty economical fashion. So well done to both of you. I hope this has got you really enthused, Robbie, Amy, but more importantly, the fans out there who have been hanging out for the season and all the players as well who just can't wait to get cracking. You all know all about that. Just take us through it. What's this feeling like for a player when you've had such a long off season, Amy and Rob, and now you're just ready to go for another campaign?
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, they always talk about it. They bang on about it. The longest season in the world in the A-League. So the players are just itching to get to the base with the FFA Cup. But I think the extra excitement around sort of the relaunch of the A-Leagues is just what's getting people up and about. The coverage, we saw it on Network 10 throughout the spring carnival, part of the racing coverage, the ads, the campaigns. It's so visible for the first time in a long time. The league just feels like it's so visible. It's in your face, and I just can't wait for it to start.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think the lack of actual physical football being played out there, even, you know, New South Wales have been locked down for so long, even getting NPL. So I think the opportunity to get out there and watch live football again, particularly with this new branding, Channel 10 are plugging this everywhere. You're seeing it on the prime time with the ads. They're certainly recruiting everywhere they can. So this is a really good, exciting feel about it. And I think as the world starts to open up again, as you can get around and watch these world-class matches and the signings like Sturridge, what better time to get out there and watch live football and watch these absolute superstars?
I'll finish off with the Sturridge dance. It's been a pretty good opening episode. Thanks so much for joining in and for getting enthused about the upcoming season. Amy, well done. Cracking debut. Robbie, great to be back with you, my good friend. And we've managed to link up again. So can't wait for a long season, but one that promises to be a brilliant one. Join us each and every week on the A-League's official podcast. Thanks so much for listening to the season preview.
What? Boy, I don't think they're ready for this. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. Pull up on them and it look nice. Look nice. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future. These moves looking real nice in the future.
Yeah, we look nice, future looking nice, we don't need to tell them twice.
Here comes the future.
Yeah, we look nice, future looking real nice, we don't need to tell them twice.
Here comes the future.